Hi, this is Amrita Sukumar, and I'm bringing to you this podcast called Unsettling. Look around you. Everyone is trying to create their own story. Make a tiny change in someone's life by just following their passion, and in turn, inspiring the others to follow suit. This podcast brings to you stories of people who have defied the definition of settled set by the society and have created their own. They have found happiness in their version of settling.
Yours. Mark Twain once said, "The man who does not read has no advantage over the man who cannot read." This quote inspired today's guest so much that he started reading intensively, and he authored over a dozen books. Dr. V. Raghunathan is an academic, author, columnist, and a hobbyist. He has a PhD in finance from IIM Calcutta. He's currently an adjunct professor at the Schuller School of Business, York University, Toronto, Canada. He's a former professor of finance, Indian Institute of Management, Ahmedabad, former president, ING Vaisya Bank, Bangalore, former CEO, GMR Varalakshmi Foundation, India, and former director, Schuller School of Business, India Campus. He was also a visiting professor at SDA Bocconi, where he taught behavioral economics for nearly 25 years. He has served on various boards and committees of corporates, Ministry of Finance, SEBI, BSE, and NSE. Dr. Raghunathan has been named one of the top 50 management thinkers in India and the Indian diaspora for 3 years in a row, starting in 2013. He's the co-author of Beyond the Call of Duty, as well as Duryodhana, Locks, Mahabharata and Mathematics, Ganesha on the Dashboard, The Corruption Conundrum, and Other Paradoxes and Dilemmas, Don't Sprint the Marathon, and a bestseller, Games Indians Play. He is also a longtime columnist, most notably for the Economic Times, and has written over 500 papers and articles. He also writes a blog for the Times of India and formerly worked as a cartoonist for the Financial Express. So to learn how not to sprint, but to run the marathon of life effectively, I would like to welcome Dr. V. Raghunathan. Hello, sir. How are you?
I'm good. Thank you. Thank you very much, Amrita. It's a pleasure being here.
So, sir, I just wanted to jump right in and ask you, you've taken up such myriad roles in your career, you know, of an academic, of an author, of a columnist, cartoonist, CEO. So, one, which role do you like the most? And two, how was the journey so far?
So, which role you like the most is a difficult question to answer. It's like asking a parent, which kid you like the most? Because I would have done none of those things if I had not been enjoying them. Okay. My 20 years at IIM Ahmedabad, teaching some of the best students in the world, not just the country, was a fascinating experience in itself. Then running an actual bank rather than being a consultant or on the board alone, actually running a bank for 4 years was another high of a very different kind, very different challenges, very different experience, which I would not exchange for anything else. Yeah. The 15 years after that, and a part of it parallelly, in some other roles like director of the Schulich School or GMR Industries and so on. But throughout, I was also heading the GMR Foundation, which was a large foundation, working in about 15, 16 locations in India, about 25 locations, 15, 16 states in India, the field of education, health, and community work, basically. So all of these have been fascinating experiences because here I was dealing with children to whom I could make a difference.
Correct.
In IIM Ahmedabad, you don't make a difference to the child. The kid is so bright, he will do well with or without you. Whereas here, where there was an engineering college with 4,000 students and degree college, schools and so on, it was a different kind of an experience, which again, I would exchange for nothing. Mm-hmm. And my journey as an author has been a hobby come pleasure, and a cathartic process because, living in India is a fascinating country. You don't have a minute to get bored. But at the same time, it's fascinating and yet infuriating in many ways. So you need a cathartic process. That is what brought the columnist out in me, as well as then I started writing books. So I have been a regular columnist, except now I'm reaching a stage where I wonder, you know, whether time is better spent now, at least, because all these years I was terribly busy, traveling and doing all kinds of other things. Mm-hmm. So I have to catch up on the backlog of reading in life. So I devote a little more time. So my writing columns has come down a wee bit.
Okay.
But my book writing has gone up. In fact, my forthcoming book on behavioral economics with Penguin Random House is a very important book that I'm looking forward to. Mm-hmm. So yes, there are no favorites. They're all favorites in different genres. Sorry.
Okay.
And of course, my lock collection has been a different high of all of these, because that's been a parallel process over the last 40 years practically, or 38 years practically.
Mm-hmm.
And, which has given me a very different kind of a high. It's a very parallel aspect of the personality. In some circles, I'm better known for my log collection than as an academic or author or a columnist or a CEO or anything else. So yes, I think all of these are amazing experiences, which I would not want to trade off with anything else.
Oh, I completely agree. And it's a very beautiful journey that you have, transversed, and I've just read about it. But one question that comes to my mind is that, what made you choose this? Like, was there a particular decision or was there an incident that made you choose a particular career path as an author or as an academic? What made you choose these paths?
Yeah, good question. You see, I was, most of us are born in a narrow band of IQ, so to speak, 90 mm-hmm. to 110.
Right.
The 160 IQs are few and far between, okay? So I was one of these average, let us say, the 120 IQ types, okay?
Uh-huh.
Now, and large majority falls in that category.
Mm-hmm.
So I learned very early in life that if I had to distinguish myself in any way, whatever way, because I was no Sachin Tendulkar or a Mozart who had some great gift the moment I was born, which I knew I had to pursue, nothing of the kind.
Mm-hmm.
I did my BSc accidentally. I did my MBA accidentally. I went for my first job accidentally. I, in fact, started my life as a naval officer, which I quit during the training period itself.
Mm-hmm.
So the one thing I had learned very early in life was that there was no substitute to hard work.
Yeah.
Because I was also only 17 when I did my undergraduation, which means mm-hmm. I was not mentally very developed yet compared to the 19, 20 year olds maybe.
Good.
So I decided that if I had to stand up to them or do better than them, the only way out was, no matter what came my way, do it well and devote enormous hard work on it.
Mm.
Because often we say that, if you're a Mozart or a Tendulkar, good for you. But most of us are not. That doesn't mean that we let our life go and drift as it is.
Mm-hmm.
So I just learned to work hard. And then I said, there's only one lifetime. You don't want to do the same thing from the day you join till the day you die. So, that's how I, picked up different things, put a lot of effort in each of them. Each of them has been taken to a decent conclusion in some ways,
mm-hmm.
Reaching all the way the best you could under the circumstances. And, I may not be an internationally acclaimed academic, but in India, I was reasonably well known. I may not be the world's best author, but yes, I've written competent 10 books with HarperCollins and Penguin alone, apart from a few others. Yes, I have. I'm not the best columnist in the world, but I've written enough columns to be called a columnist today. And it's the same with whatever else I've done. I've reached the highest level as a CEO, and I've made a mark as a collector, for example. So this is, I'm a living proof that you can be very average, but do as well as you can. Exploiting your potential is what life is all about. And I think I've been doing it, and I continue to do that.
Wow. So basically your talisman is to take up the opportunity that comes your way and make sure that you put in as much hard work as possible and
as
to see it through.
That's it. Yeah.
That's the only policy.
Never leave anything off.
Yeah. Yes. So that is important. Sir, so you mentioned that you had a term as a professor at IIM, and you said that the students were really smart. So since there were so many brilliant students, who are the students that stick out the most? And what traits do you remember about these students?
There are quite a few names. Some of them have done very, very well. Raghuram Rajan himself, for example, was the RBI governor, was a student there.
Okay.
And I do have a memory of him in the class because he was so bright, you couldn't overlook him as and it will be unfair to name only a few names, because there were quite a few who were extremely bright, you know, people who have started so many startups, whether it is Naukri.com or Make My Trip and so on. Many of them are from IIM Ahmedabad, and many of the students I do remember. And obviously when you teach children who are that bright, you see, I was myself 26 when I joined as an assistant professor in IIM Ahmedabad. And I taught there for 20 years. So I was barely older than students, and some of the students would be older than me, you know, even as I was teaching. So it was, that was another aspect of hard work. If you're not hardworking, you could not stand in the classroom and face the class of 60 brilliant students who could trip you anytime. And if you are close to their age, they'll want to trip you. You know, it's fun to see a professor falling flat on his face. And if you want to avoid that fate for yourself, you've got to work doubly hard.
Correct.
If others work 5 hours for every session, I had to work 10 hours for every session.
Wow. Right. So I understand.
But yeah, it was a fun. It was fun time and challenging time. And that is what made us, rigorous teachers in many ways.
I get it. I guess if you have a task at hand and you don't put in enough effort for it, you're just going to either be very nervous to do it, or you're going to just be behind the entire crowd.
Correct.
So, sir, a lot of people are now questioning whether MBA is very necessary, because there are a lot of college dropouts who start their startups and they're earning more than their peers in the industry. So what is your take on this?
See, first thing I would say is, I entirely agree that it's not as if every successful person in the world is an MBA, you know, so get that out of the system straight away. Okay. At the same time, we need to put in a word of caution, because there's something called availability bias in behavioral economics, which means we are often swayed by the news that we see too often, or the information which is readily available. We think that is a larger truth.
Correct.
If I ask you, do more people die of accidents or AIDS or common cold? Very often people will say accidents or AIDS, whereas common cold is by far the biggest killer. That is because more news of AIDS deaths and accidental deaths come on page 3 and 5 of the newspapers than people dying of common cold. Unless it becomes a COVID. That apart. So which means that when the news media keeps on giving the stories of these successful startups, we come to believe as if you just have to start a startup to become a big successful entrepreneur. No. They don't tell you that probably only one out of 500 entrepreneurs makes it that big. Probably one out of 5,000 entrepreneurs actually makes it to a unicorn. So it's not that you just start a startup and the next stop is, you know, $1 billion valuation. No, it's not that. So we do not tell children sufficiently that, look, yes, entrepreneurship has a large positivity going for it. And yet you have to be able to assess yourself, do you want an unlimited upside or do you want to lock the downside? So yes, often an MBA does that. You know, a typical MBA who has a safe degree will take a safe job. So the downside is taken care of. You'll never die of hunger, but very likely you will not reach those exalted stratosphere of career. Very few end up doing that. Even every IIM graduate doesn't end up doing that, you know. There'll be only 1 in 1,000 who actually becomes, even among IIM graduates, you can count 10 or 15 unicorns, whereas there have been tens of thousands of students who pass through IIMs.
Correct.
So one has to put this in perspective and then say that, yes, ultimately, it's a question of doing whatever you are doing diligently. See, if by accident you are doing your MBA anyway, good for you. But if you haven't done your MBA, or if you didn't crack it into a good MBA school, it's not end of the world. As you mentioned the title of my book, Don't Sprint the Marathon, a good MBA is at best a good start in life, in professional life. But what is a good start in a marathon? Whether you had a good start or not, does it count in a marathon?
No.
It counts only in a sprint. And life mimics marathon in more ways than one in every aspect. So missing a good MBA or missing a good IIT is, you see, socially we have put a sense of a failure around these. We even treat children very differently who didn't crack an IIT. He's a lesser mortal in the family.
Okay.
You know, a kid who gets 72% marks, we, you know, tell the kid, don't tell the neighbors the percentage that you got. Just say all is okay, you know. So we bring a sense of shame into the kid.
Correct.
Okay. And then we expect him to become a great entrepreneur, which is stupid, right?
That is
so
true.
The thing is, we need, even as an educational system, as a society and as parents, we also need to teach our children to manage failure. Because if you can't manage failure, you can't even aim at entrepreneurship.
True. That is true.
Because entrepreneurship is probably, if you try 10 things, you may reasonably succeed in one. And if you tried 100 things, you may succeed in one big time. But do you have the persistence to go through those 100 things? That is where hard work counts, and that is where persistence counts.
Okay.
These things are not told by media, because these are not, they don't make good stories. They may make good morning chat with you on your streaming of talks like these, but that's not your newspaper read, which tells you that, look, it's not so easy to be an entrepreneur.
That is so true, because everyone feels, like most of us feel, that you know, doing a job is difficult and starting up is so easy, the way it is portrayed, as you said, in the media.
Exactly.
And when you actually step into that role, you realize that there are so many beatings that you have to take as a boss in comparison to the beatings you have to take as an employee, because you are protected as an employee. You get a salary monthly.
Yeah, as I said, downside is taken care of.
Yes, the downside is taken care of. But once you are there, you know, at the front line, and you're just getting all those, you know, bombarding from the clients and whatnot, everything is going wrong. It is very important to have that persistence, to have that mindset to go ahead. If you don't have that mindset, you're going to be stuck where you are, or maybe you will quit and go back to doing a job. Yes. So,
and to link to your MBA question, in some ways, having a good degree is like a parachute. If you finish your degree at 22, there's no harm giving your next 4 or 5 years to get it out of your system that I tried my entrepreneurship bit. If it seems to be catching traction, then you could go with it. If not, you could always come back to a job.
Correct.
So in a way, a good degree is a decent parachute. But, you know, but in the long term, whether it is an IIM degree or an SPJN degree or a lesser school degree, none of that matters so much.
Yes.
It matters for the first job, not thereafter.
Correct.
Thereafter, it is your hard work that's going to count, and how much you put into that job is all that counts.
So true. So true. So true, sir. It's all about working and researching, because if you don't keep on improving as a person and you don't gain knowledge, it is not going to help you out. At
and for that, IIMs are not the only last stop for an MBA. You know, you, as long as you're learning, because today is an age where we have learned to learn.
Yes.
Okay. I can actually do an MBA just sitting here at zero cost only by Googling.
Correct. So true. As long as you're ready to learn.
Yeah, exactly. So that's what comes.
Sir, that's true. So moving on to the next question. So there was an article recently that I read in the newspaper that mentioned that India is on the path to become technological advanced in a few years. So with the mindset that we have, that you mentioned in Games Indians Play, do you think India will be the next Silicon Valley and people will not jump on the next opportunity to get a visa and go overseas? What is your take on this?
You see, my take on this is that we need to view it with a sense of balance.
Right.
First of all, we cannot get carried away by the number of entrepreneurs or even unicorns that India turns out.
Mm-hmm.
That is because the Indian population is 1.3 billion. Okay. Now, yes, India last year had about some, you know, I don't know, there are different numbers going around, but 70, 80 startups, major startups of $1 billion valuation or more.
Yes.
Now, if you compare it with Israel, Israel may be some 20, 25.
Correct.
But to congratulate India, while the population of Israel is 95 lakhs, population of India is 130 crore. So per 1 crore population, if you look at the number of entrepreneurs that India has generated, or number of unicorns that India has in the world, So, you know, the question is, if we look at any number of India in absolute terms, we'll be the world's number two or three. Hmm. Number of plumbers, India will be higher. Number of doctors, number of engineers, number of electricians. I mean, if you have 1.3 billion population, anybody will be larger in number. Okay.
Correct.
But the way we play this, and India's always, to my mind, and I've said it in my games, Indians Play, which you quoted, that we are long on talk and short on action. Okay. Now, these entrepreneurs who are entrepreneurs are largely entrepreneurs despite the challenges that they face in India, not because of it. Mm-hmm. Our power cost is among the highest in the world.
Oh.
Difficulty of doing business in India is among the highest even today.
Okay.
Okay. Uh-huh. So corruption is among the highest even today. We are among the most corrupt nations. So what is a country congratulating itself for on these entrepreneurs? Imagine if we were less corrupt, if we had ease of doing business,
so many,
and if we had high quality education going around, and our education for 60% of the population sucks completely. Well, that is government education, which where schools are operated even without teachers, or one class will handle three different classroom, three class four and class five in a single classroom. Okay. Now with these kind of things, we keep patting ourselves on the back for political reasons, for mileages to be had by somebody or something. Makes no sense. If you really want, if you are truly caring about your country, we need to work towards reducing corruption. See, the current parties came to power on the whole platform of corruption, if you remember.
Yeah.
Okay. Anna Hazare's whole movement was about anti-corruption.
Yes.
But we have not even passed a Lokpal bill in the last 7 years. So what are we talking about?
Correct.
So we are long on words and short on action. Whatever India is achieving is highly laudable. My heartiest congratulations to every entrepreneur who has made it, but he or she has made it despite what India offers them, not because of what India offers them. So let us be very clear on that.
That's true. That's true. If there continues,
and this is true of all governments.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
This is true of all other governments from 1947. Yeah, yeah. In 70 years, even today, 40% of Indians can't read and write truly.
Agreed.
Even today, 50% of India earns less than $2 a day after 75 years. So what are we talking?
That is true. That is true. Even I, so as a professional...
Every government is responsible. We have reduced politics to only winning the next elections. That's it. Public good. We don't have roads to walk on. We don't have parks to walk in. We don't have hospitals, government hospitals which really work, or government education that really works. We have the worst parameters on health. We have the worst parameters on poverty. We have the worst parameter on lactating mothers. Worse than some of the sub-Saharan African countries.
So we have a lot to
worry about. Things are grim, and we only play up the success stories, you know. And anybody who doesn't talk about the success story is not a patriot.
Correct.
Today's definition is, in fact, I will be called, if you know, depending on who this thing goes out to, I'll be called a non-patriotic character, that I'm not speaking good of India.
Mm-hmm.
But I care. That's why I wrote Games Indians Play.
That is true. We still have a long way to go. There is a lot of friction.
Long
that
way
happening.
To go. The world has shrunk. If anybody sees every world on the TV, you look at capital, even in Africa, their roads look so much better.
Yes.
Cleaner.
Yes, yes. That's true.
We have we talk about a Clean India campaign. But what is the real change on the ground? Whether it's Pune or Bangalore, you just go around and see the filth, uncleared filth in the middle of the important segments of roads, which are uncleared for days. So that's what I mean. We are long on talk, short on action, because three-letter words are easy to make.
No, it's true. It's true. Whatever you said is so true. Even professionals are getting paid so less. My road in front of my house is still dug up. It's been 6 months.
Once they dig it for 6 months, you won't see anything happen.
No progress at all.
They will start 7 bridges in the city, all, obstructing all the major roads without any side road which is decent or travelable, and then they'll run out of money, work will be stuck for 3 years. I mean, a bridge which should take not more than 90 days in construction takes up to 4, 5, 6 years.
Correct.
And once completed, the wait for some politician to come and cut the ribbon, and therefore it's waiting for 6 more months.
Exactly. And then they dig it up again.
They don't have time. So, and we, all of us accept it. If I put a talk like this, there'll be 500 people who will be ready to come and contradict me. But when the government does nothing and the whole world is dug up, you see very few voices raised against the local government.
Yes, yes.
What is going on?
We just learn to accept and adjust and move on.
Yeah, correct. So, we are there to troll the wrong causes, but we aren't there to criticize the right causes.
Right.
There are lakhs of trollers for all kinds of articles written, or all kinds of, secularism suddenly has become a bad word today in India. It becomes so divisive.
Mm-hmm.
Whereas Hinduism was nothing but secularism, if you ask me.
Yes.
Hinduism was secularism.
Correct, correct.
I mean, everybody was accepted. Nobody was hated. You could have one God, you could have 100 gods. You could go to temple, you need not go to temple. You could read Gita, you may not read Gita.
Correct.
But you are a Hindu nevertheless. Which other religion is that accommodating?
That's true.
You have to go to church every Sunday. You have to only swear on Bible, whether you like it or not. You have to go to mosque. You have to pray 5 times a day. Hinduism asks nothing of you, right?
No.
You just had to be a good human being. That's all it said.
That is true. So, well, I guess we have to take action more than just talking. And that is where we'll get
to do what we need to do. That's it. What is my duty towards my immediate environment?
Mm-hmm.
Do I speak up? Do I stand up for causes? Do I contribute constructively? See, everybody cannot contribute in every aspect.
Correct.
But whatever has come to you by accident, in that you contribute the best you can. That's all I'm saying.
Yes.
I'm not saying everybody has to be an activist. Mm-hmm. But a teacher must teach very well. An official in the RTO office or land registration office should be honest and do the work properly.
Correct.
So that's all that one is asking, which is not too much to ask, actually.
Just do the duties assigned to
you. It is too much.
It does happen a lot that you go and get some work done and it doesn't happen. But yes, as long as people are honest and, they work hard at their own duties that they've taken up voluntarily.
And no point blaming politicians, because they are a meta us. Yes. Ultimately, it is we who are also reflected there.
Correct.
So, externalizing the problem is not going to help. We ourselves have to decide that I will be honest. Let us not talk about, the system is dishonest. Okay, it is. Where they extort money from me, I'll have to pay. I have no option. But I will push against it. And in my interactions, I will remain honest.
Correct.
So we need to do that kind of a pushing. Otherwise, we are very readily saying, but everybody is dishonest. So why should I be? Or I alone cannot change the whole world. The two fatalistic statements, our favorite fatalistic statements. What can I alone do?
Correct.
Or everybody is doing it, so why should I do it? If that is attitude, India will never, it won't even have a hope of changing in 500 years.
That's true. That's so true.
Yeah.
You have to start somewhere. Someone has to start
somewhere. You have to start from yourself.
From yourself. And if you begin, maybe 10 other people just looking at you, they learn
exactly.
How to... That as long as you make even a small impact, it's
that's all. Correct. If everyone impacts 2 people, you'll be surprised how the geometric series proliferates. 2 becomes 4, 4 becomes 8, 8 becomes 16, 16 becomes 32. Within 10 iterations, you have the whole country's population covered.
Correct. That is true.
So that's it.
Still a long way to go.
Yep.
So, sir, I had one more question for you. If you scroll through LinkedIn nowadays, you see that apart from, the natural job that people are doing, there are other aspects that people are following. They are trying to, do something new, something earth-shattering. Maybe somebody's writing a book, somebody's doing a podcast parallelly, somebody has to show that they are different from the rest. So I have a two-part question for you. Is it important to join this race to, you know, look different and have a very nice portfolio? And how important is it to be acknowledged like this, to be seen by a potential employer?
All right. You see, I am always a middle path guy.
Okay.
Anything in moderation is okay. Anything which is obsessive or excessive is usually not so okay. Okay.
Right.
Which means that, yes, supposing you're an undergraduate planning to apply for a master's somewhere, say in a US university or something. Yes, if you've had other dimensions to what you do, if you have taken up some causes, if you cleaned up your street in your region, and if you made a podcast of it and put it up for good measure, or something else that you did which was interesting, more than putting it up on the social media, it is doing these things which was important. Okay.
Right.
And I would imagine, yes, if you have done them, there's no harm putting it.
Correct.
Okay. Because all said and done, even MBAs tell you that if you don't do marketing, you know, even an excellent product can fail.
True.
And whether we like it or not, if today's world is about social media marketing, so to speak, maybe a little bit of marketing is inevitable.
Okay.
But just sexing up your CV is not what your innate abilities are all about.
True.
Okay. So I would put 80% emphasis on doing these multiple, multivaried kind of things. And maybe 20-25% weightage on showcasing it on the social media. Okay. And then the reality dawns on the potential recruiter also. For example, when you, yes, sometimes they ask for your social media accounts and so on, but they will really look at what you have actually done. And if supposing you've done something which is endorsed by someone else, US universities will take that very happily. And they'll say, oh, this youngster certainly has potential, you know, interest beyond. He's only a BA sociology student, but he has gone into the community and done so many things.
Correct.
Okay. So there's a difference between this sociology student and that sociology student. Okay. So I would put that 75-25 kind of a balance on doing versus marketing.
Right. As you mentioned before, that it should not be all talk and no action, but it should be most of it should be action.
More action and some talk.
Less talk.
Some talk.
Some talk at least, because I've done it. So at least please, dekhlo.
Yeah. Correct. मैं नहीं दिखाऊंगा तो और कौन दिखाएगा?
That is true. That is true. So, sir, as you have an experience as a professor and a consultant. So, usually what happens is after a while, people hit a curve in their career, mid-career. So there is absolutely no growth in that career. But when you switch, what happens is the organization looks for somebody younger for a little less, you know, pay remuneration that they give. So, I have a two-part question. What would be the survival strategy for such individuals? One. And second, how can the business owners or the corporations make sure that they retain such talent at the same time, you know, provide them enough remuneration and, you know, match the kind of money that they're looking for?
You see, the answer to both of them is the same.
Right.
Which is investment in self. Remain relevant.
Right.
Okay. You know, I manage my website. Do you know I learned HTML online? So I do all the editing myself.
Oh my God.
Okay. I learned Urdu reading and writing online entirely on my own.
Okay.
Without joining any formal classes, only by Googling. No classes. Okay. So the point I'm making is this plateau is often reached because people stop investing in themselves. So you are in some ways, in a very lighter way, you are the machinery of yourself, which is earning.
Correct.
If you don't maintain the machine, if you don't upgrade its life periodically, obviously there'll be an end to that life, right? Useful life.
Yeah.
So you have to keep investing in remaining relevant. Okay. Hmm. Supposing you were, it depends, you know, in every field, it may be different kind of a investment in self. Hmm. So I don't know what will be the right example to give here, but you know, even if I'm a professor in my own field, multiple things are happening. Use of technology is multiplying. If I keep on giving a lecture on the blackboard with my chalk, no matter how good a teacher I am, I lose some grip on my audience.
Correct.
Because they want to relate to what is happening. How do I teach them to learn on their own? Can I bring the web, internet right into the classroom and say that, all right, we don't know the answer to this. Let us see if we can find it. So what I'm saying is, this is also a kind of a self-discovery.
Correct.
Where
correct.
You are teaching in a very different pedagogical plane, you know, not what you have always been doing for the last so many years. Hmm. All right. So it is investing in yourself, no matter which job you are in. Hmm. You know, maybe you knew HTML, but did you learn Python at the right time? Hmm. Maybe Python is becoming old. Have you caught on to the next latest that is happening if you're a code writer? Hmm. So what I'm saying is, follow the latest trends.
Correct.
You can formally invest in yourself or you can informally invest in yourself. Hmm. Formal investment is proper getting a diploma, degree or whatever, online education parallel to your work life or whatever, or just being so damn good Googling that when there's a problem, the organization looks up to you. Then they will automatically pay you more.
Correct.
If you want to quit, they'll say, please don't quit. But if you're one of the 100 have-beens who's easily replaceable.
Right.
Okay, you know, you are one demotivated employee. There's another demotivated employee. Okay, you go, I'll get one more. So, you know, then it's a downward trend throughout.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Okay.
Correct.
So I think both the questions that you ask, the answer is the same. Invest in yourself.
Yeah.
Learn. In fact, your survival, even in business tomorrow, if you become an entrepreneur, you know, if you are only selling typewriters for the whole of your life, even Godrej went out of production.
Correct.
Because who uses a typewriter?
Nobody does now. Yes.
So today making a great fountain pen is not going to be very helpful. How many people write with it other than, you know, collecting it as a collector's item? So you have to be relevant to the times. You have to upgrade yourself. So had somebody in Godrej or Remington told them that, look, writing style, the instruments are changing, we need to invest in PCs, maybe they would have given IBM a run for their money. But no, they didn't.
That's true. That is so true.
So one has to keep
on upgrading and being relevant in the market.
We talk about version 2.0, 3.0, 4.0, but never for ourselves. Are you a version 2.0 of yourself?
Yes.
Are you a version 3.0 of yourself?
So never stop learning.
You are nothing but your experience.
Correct.
You are a sum total of your experience. If your experience remains the same, you remain stagnant.
True. So important. You have to be relevant in the space, because if you keep on going with the same attitude or the same knowledge that you had before, you are going nowhere. You're just going to be in the same place for a long time.
That is why there are very few jobs where new learning is usually not required. Supposing I have a driver at home, a chauffeur. When he was 20-year-old, when I recruited him, he used to drive a car. Today is 32, he still drives a car.
Correct.
Okay. So there's no upgrading required. Except if I bought a better car, but that only makes his life easier. Okay.
Correct.
It doesn't make his life any more difficult. It only makes with a Mercedes or a BMW, your life is only easier to drive. Yes, a little bit of risk goes up, because if he bangs it, my pocket is a bit larger. Okay.
Correct.
But the point is, in these jobs, one may think that there is not a great deal of, how do I enrich? I'm only a driver. There's one way to look at it. Another way to look at it is, you know, as a driver, are you the best driver in the city? If you are, supposing you can speak 3-4 languages, supposing you have learned all the politeness that comes associated with the job and so on. Tomorrow, if I don't want him, I will endorse him to somebody good who will be willing to pay a premium for him or her. So even in jobs where we believe that there is no conventional upgrade possible, in fact, yesterday, day before, there was a news item of an auto rickshaw driver who had Wi-Fi and all the magazines and laptop and you know, a small fridge with some soft drinks and things like those. Okay.
Correct.
Now, he says, people queue up for him.
Mm.
They wait for him. Hmm. They fix time with him. Now, this guy, his next stop will be, he can ask six of his friends, if you give the same services, those who ask for me, since I can't be there everywhere simultaneously, I'll get some business to you for a small 2% commission for me.
Correct.
They will get more business and he will be running a service.
Correct.
So what I'm saying is there's no such job where upgrade is not possible.
So true.
Even in an auto rickshaw driver, upgrade is possible, right?
Yes. So it is important to upgrade. It is important to look at yourself from a different perspective.
Think how you can upgrade. That is the only thing that will distinguish you from others, from the run of the mill.
Interesting. It's it is making me think, like, if even if an auto rickshaw driver can upgrade, why aren't you looking for your own strengths?
Correct.
So important. Correct. Sir, coming to your books, you have written so many varied concepts, you know, maybe corruption conundrum and other paradoxes and dilemmas, games Indians play, Ganesha on the dashboard. It is mostly based on psychology. Then Locke's Mahabharata and mathematics. You found a pattern between all three.
Ganesha on the dashboard was about lack of scientific temper in India.
Oh.
You see, they're all on different themes, but this Ganesha on the dashboard.
Okay.
What we do is when you're buying a car, first of all, people look at an auspicious day to go and get the delivery.
Yeah.
Okay.
Right.
They will look at whether it is raw column when you're leaving home to go for taking the delivery. Then they'll drive the car from the showroom straight to the Balaji temple for having it blessed.
Correct.
Then for good measure, they'll stick a plastic Ganesha on the dashboard. All of this because we want the car to remain safe and accident free and so on.
Correct.
And then we will drive without seat belt. Or put it on only when we see a cop there.
Yes.
So where is our scientific temper? Our idea of God is not that he gave you brains enough for someone to make seat belts and for you to wear it. But we believe I will drive without seat belt, but God should protect me if I get into an accident. So that is our scientific temper.
Correct.
So that book is all about
scientific temperament.
Lack of scientific temper.
So,
so they're all different things. No, I mentioned this because that was not on psychology.
Definitely. So as you said, this is also a different theme. Then beyond the call of duty was,
the call of duty was, these kids who were barely 17, 18, 19, though they were from our colonial masters, but that is not what, that is not the take here. The take is, today, when I interview a youngster, he says, my parents live in Bombay. I don't want a job outside Bombay. Or my parents are in Pune. My comfort zone is Pune. I want a job in Pune. Okay. Whereas these kids, those days, India was the place for civil services and so on. And anybody who joined the East India Company would be obviously sent to India.
Correct.
And these kids, they were 17, 18 or 19 when they reached India. It would take 3 or 4 months to reach India. And if they wrote a letter home, 4 months going, 4 months coming back, it would take eight months for one exchange with the parents. Okay. Now, India at the time was practically uncharted waters. Roads weren't there. Rails weren't there. Waterways weren't there. Much of it was actually chartered by them. Okay.
Correct.
So these youngsters did some amazing work. Asiatic Library. Who built it? Do we even know? Okay. Do we know the story of it? Do we know the story? You know, I think, which is the place? Or similarly, Darjeeling Tea, who made the name so famous? Okay. So we don't know many of these stories which these youngsters did. And they never knew that one day somebody will write about them, or the guy who who cracked Ashoka's pillars language, pushing back India's history by 2000 years properly. Okay, now all these kinds of youngsters, they didn't know that somebody will write a book about them someday. They never knew that they were doing something fascinating.
Correct.
But they did something out of the sheer passion of what they were doing, what they took as their work, which became monumental. Okay. Yeah. So the point is, therefore, how do we take inspiration from such stories?
Correct.
What inspired them? And why do we lack that inspiration today? I mean, they could come away 10,000 miles and interactions taking forever. And in a country where people look different, they spoke different, they wore different clothes, they ate different food, they worship different gods, but they could still do all of this and we can't do it.
Correct, correct.
So why do we want to get, you know, the more you get stuck to a region, the more limited your options. And today it's getting worse. There are any number of engineering colleges and government is even encouraging it further that there should be more engineering colleges in local languages. Sure, you have a great engineering college in Marathi and you can't even speak English. Are you employable outside Maharashtra?
No.
Or outside Karnataka or outside Andhra? If everybody had read, first of all, is there enough literature in Maharashtra or in Telugu or in Tamil Nadu or in Karnataka to substitute the world's literature in science and technology?
Not really.
So the point is, if we, and on top of it, if we ourselves restrict it further, saying I want to be in Pune because my parents are here, you are shrinking your world for yourself.
Correct.
Okay. So you're limiting your opportunities for yourself. So you're making your world play smaller.
Yes, that's true.
Yeah.
So actually my question was that, you know, one, how did you come up with such concepts? You know, as you mentioned, everything is so different from each other. And second, in that interview, you had mentioned that you got a little negative feedback for Games Indians Play from a lot of people. So how do you handle that, you know, as an author? How do you handle negative feedback?
I don't look at it. There will be negative, anything you say which is bad about India. See, yes. I have written it in very good spirit.
Correct.
Meaning, it's a wart on our face. We need to be aware of it. And if light laser surgery can remove it, give it a shot. Okay. Now, so it's holding a mirror to our ugliness. It doesn't mean that is all that is there to Indians.
Correct.
But you see, for pseudo patriots, anything you say negative about India makes me a bad guy. We will behave as we do, but nobody should point a finger at it. Whereas I would imagine that I am trying to be helpful. I am saying that, look, in today's shrunken world where the whole world is on display on a screen, we come out looking much worse. When on the world ranking, India becomes the 140th country in ease of doing business or in terms of corruption ranking, fifth from the bottom or something, don't we feel ashamed? So, you know, so therefore, if you keep on looking at people who are criticizing, you know, as somebody said, Winston Churchill said, if you stop for every barking dog on the street, you'll never get to your destination or some such thing. You've got to do what you got to do.
True. So ignorance is the best policy in such case.
But yes, if you've done something wrong, which is pointed out by somebody, you owe it to yourself.
Correct.
To address.
Correct it.
But not criticism for one's views. I'm free to express my views.
Correct.
And I put it openly. Whereas these people who criticize are all faceless critiques.
Yes.
You know.
True.
Then go and write a counter book yourself if you're so damn pissed off. That is more difficult.
That is more difficult.
They're long on words, short on action. The same old story.
So it is good to have that kind of attitude, you know. Just express your opinions and not worry about what the others are thinking.
Yeah, I had no ulterior motive in saying what I wanted to say. So why should I worry?
That's true. That's true. So, sir, I wish to ask you, for a person who breaks the shackles of limiting beliefs with his writing, what drew you towards collecting old padlocks in the first place?
You know, I was always a collecting kind of a chap, even as a kid. I used to collect those match cover matchbox covers, yeah. stamps, coins, and so on. But they all fell out as I was growing up. And then mm-hmm. by accident, I came across some locks once when the first one, when we were holidaying, my wife and I had just got married and gone to Gulmarg, where there was this old lock hanging on our cottage, which looked very unique. So I offered to buy a new Navtal lock in exchange for that. And the chowkidar was quite happy. And I was also equally happy. So we had that. Then in Ahmedabad, I used to go to the flea market there on the Sabarmati riverbed. So mm-hmm. I saw another very different looking lock. Then my wife and I were traveling down south, because we are both Tamilian, but we have never lived down south.
Okay.
So we had taken a car and we were just using temple architectures. Though we are both atheists, but temple architecture, but architecture is beautiful.
Yes, it is.
So we took those architectural points as our travel points mm-hmm. and landed up in my grandparents' house in a village, Angarai, mm-hmm. near Lalgudi, off Trichy, about 12 kilometers off Trichy. So there was another old lock on the back door. So I picked that up. So by then I had three or four locks. They all looked very different from each other mm-hmm. and very different from what we think of as padlocks.
Correct.
So which caught my attention? I was interested in anything old and anything mechanical. Mm-hmm. So then I started collecting. I started going around and so on. But over a period of time, I didn't have to go around. The intermediaries would reach out to me. They would give me a call. I'll say, okay, I'll pay you for the train. Or in later years, I'll pay you for the flight. You come by, bring the logs, and I'll see that, and so on. So that is how it kept on growing. Yeah.
You have around 700 logs now, right?
Yeah, 650, 700.
Where do you keep them? Is it in your home?
Yeah, it's all in the house. Maybe I'll WhatsApp you some pictures.
Yes, please do. Definitely. Thank you.
I'll do that.
So, sir, do you ever...
Actually, there's a film coming out on my logs, which is done by Bangalore International Center. What I will do is, mm-hmm. and it should be out in the next 4, 5, 6 days, mm-hmm. I'll send that link to you.
Done. That'd be okay. great.
I'll send that to you. Yeah. Instead of sending standalone pictures. Yeah.
Okay. I will definitely watch it. I'm completely intrigued to know after your description of them. So, sir, do you ever take a break from trying new things? And if you do, what do you do in that time?
I write fiction. Okay. I read fiction. Achha. I read fiction. I have... You know, most of these, you know, whether it is Jeffrey Archer or Grisham or Lee Child or Wilbur Smith or any of these are great pastimes, actually.
Okay.
So, yes, I read that kind of a thing for lightening up. Uh-huh. Otherwise, I read nonfiction more often. So.
Okay. So, even when
because
you...
Because if I have to write, I have to read. If you don't read, you can't write.
You can't write. That is true. Yeah. And considering the fact that you have such varied concepts on all your books,
yes,
I'm assuming
exactly.
you did
they
so
all
much research. You've done
right.
so much research about each topic.
Yes. Correct.
So, sir, do you believe that networking is important with people? And if yes, how big of a network do you have and how do you keep in touch with them in a meaningful way?
Okay. One of my weak points in life, which is regrettable, is I don't maintain networks very well.
Okay.
I have a large network. Obviously, when you're as old as I am, you know a lot more people, right? In mm-hmm. that sense, yes. Okay.
Correct.
And also, if you're a decent human being, you will have a better network. In the sense, you would have done some nice things for others. Others would have done some nice things to you, which you want to return. And, you know, so that builds on itself. It grows on itself. But if you're a negative person who's not very nice to someone, like recently I found, you know, I was going for endorsements for my forthcoming book. I was very, you know, gladdened at, you know, a lot of people agreeing to do the endorsement. Okay. So it's in some ways karma coming back, you know.
Right.
So if you are not a very negative person, people respond to you positively. So much of it depends on you. If you are a negative person, the network will be shrunk. There is no artificiality to it. You can't say, oh, I am going to build a network. You know, you can't be artificial about it.
Correct.
Networking happens with genuineness. Your genuine liking for people. If you don't genuinely like people, you can't be well networked. Throwing names is not networking. Name throwers are actually the worst networkers.
Correct. True.
So networking is about how decent a human being you've been, how positive you've been responding to others' needs in their times of need. And it's not a one or two time thing. It's the way you should be. It's a way of life. It does not distinguish on who is your junior or senior. There are research associates who were working with me when I was a 27, 28 year old guy. And these guys were research assistants in IIM Ahmedabad who are CEOs today.
Correct.
Now, if I treated them badly then because I was a professor and he was a mere research associate, they wouldn't want to shake my hands today, right?
Yes.
So that's what I mean by karma coming back in the sense, in my games and display, I call it tit for tat. You get back ultimately what you do to others, you know.
Correct.
So I would say that networking is very, very important in the human being. But it has to be a way of life, not a bag of trick.
You've given me so much to think about, and it's in a positive way, because even I notice that when I'm interacting with my guests who come on the podcast, the more genuine the interaction is, the longer we are connected. And it is, when you said it, I just reflected upon it. I'm still in touch with all the guests who have come on the podcast, and it is a nice feeling.
Correct.
So, yes, you have to be genuine. You have to genuinely be interested in what they're saying rather than, you know, just for the sake of networking, you just connect with people. It makes a lot of
difference. Not a photo shoot of smiles.
Yes. There should be a genuine connection. So true.
Correct.
I'm going to take this away. So, sir, what message would you like to give the up-and-coming youngsters who are making it in their fields?
See, I don't pretend to give any highfalutin advice. I only tell people you'll feel good at the end of your life if you exploited your potential to the fullest. And exploiting your potential to the fullest only means working genuinely, working persistently, and working hard.
Wow.
To me, that is a simple mantra of life.
So true. Thank you, sir. And coming to the last and final question, this is something that I ask everybody because everyone around us asks us to settle down. Beta, when will you settle down? So I have asked people this question. What does being settled mean to you?
What do you feel?
Sir, I think...
if you feel settled, you are settled. If you don't feel settled, you are unsettled. Right?
That's true. So it's all in the...
I actually feel settled in the sense when you have no regrets, you are settled. Okay?
Right.
If you have regrets, then you're not settled, obviously.
Correct.
Because then you are looking for, you're either worrying about missed opportunities or you are looking at some other opportunities which are not there in your life currently. So that gives you a feeling of an unsettled feeling, let us say. But if you have largely, you know, 7 out of the 10 decisions that you made about your life have been right.
Correct.
And there are no major regrets gnawing at you. And if you have a reason for doing what you are doing, and if you are enjoying what you are doing, you will feel settled.
So true.
See, parents can think you are getting married is settling. I don't know. You know, it's a decision which is fine either way. You know, somebody can choose to marry and be settled. Someone can choose not to be married and be settled. We married, my wife and I, but we chose not to have children and we still feel settled.
Correct.
You know? So the point is, you're not having a regret. I think ultimately that's all that counts. Are you comfortable with yourself? Are you comfortable with being you? See, others will want you to be somebody else and they will have their definition of what it means to you to be settled.
Correct.
Okay. But you have to look inside and say, all right, what difference do I want to make? Is this the right way to do it? Or should I be doing something else? If so, what are those things? Then why don't I do it? Why am I stuck here if I'm not enjoying my job? If I think my real talent lies elsewhere and I can Even if I make a little less money, I'll be having more fun there, as long as the money gives me enough to, you know,
survive, yeah,
manage a decent life. Yeah, one is not saying money is not important. Money is important. But so if you have reasons, reasoned reasons, which you have arrived at, okay, you are settled.
True. So, well, these were all my questions. And what I have taken away from this entire conversation is that it's all about you. As long as you keep learning, you keep upgrading yourself, you are settled, you don't have any regrets. You make
exploiting
genuine connections.
Your potential to the fullest.
Yes. So that is it is all from you, correct? It comes from within. There's nobody, no external force who's going to help you be who you are.
Yes.
It's all
you
just
have to
within.
Exploit your potential to the fullest. Often we do only 20, 30, 40% of it.
Correct. So it is very important.
Yeah.
So, well, these were all my questions, sir.
Thank you, Amrita. It's been such a pleasure chatting with you. And you asked some very, very interesting questions. You made my day. Thank you.
Thank you, sir. You've made my day as well. Because you gave me an opportunity to nitpick your brain, and the knowledge that you've shared is so enlightening, at least for me.
And you have this infectious way of eliciting information, which has been very, very gratifying. Thank you.
Thank you, sir. Thank you, sir, for doing this.
Have a good day.
You too,
sir. Have a good day and all the best. Take care. Stay safe.
You too, sir.
Bye.
Hi, if you can hear this, that means you have reached the end of the episode. So like, share, subscribe, follow, stay tuned to Unsettling. And if you want to get in touch with me, you can always reach out to me on my Instagram page, AmritaSukumar_Unsettling, or send me an email on podcast.unsettling.as@gmail.com. Hope to hear from you soon. Bye.